Welcome to The Gathering Resources. The following audio is from our breakout session entitled Global Religious Freedom, Hope, and Concern. This session is moderated by David French and features Sam Brownback and Karen Ellis.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, everybody. Can you all hear me? All right. Welcome. We're going to get started in 3, 2, 1 now. My name is David French. You're not here to hear me. I'm moderating a panel with two of the foremost experts in the world on religious liberty. And without much ado, I'm going to go ahead and introduce them, and I'm going to do it in a way that I'm going to give you the top line stuff about them and a fun fact. Okay? So first, we'll start with Karen here. Karen is the director of the Edmiston Center for the Study of the Bible and Ethnicity at Reformed Theological Seminary in Atlanta, Robert Canada Fellow for World Christianity. Hyper-educated, I'd say.
Hyper-educated.
Master of Arts from Westminster Theological Seminary. Master of Fine Arts from Yale. A school that trashed my law school application. PhD in virtue ethics at Oxford, at the Oxford Center for Mission Studies in Oxford, England, and also has headlined at the Kennedy Center. That's your fun fact. All right. My goodness, Ambassador Brownback, congressman, senator, governor, ambassador at large for religious liberty. I've always wondered, you know, the Southern manners at me always likes to use the proper honorific. So when you've been a congressman, senator, governor, and an ambassador, what's the honorific?
Grandpa.
Okay,
Grandpa.
There you go. And the fun fact is, formerly taught agricultural law at Kansas State. So, yeah, fantastic. All right, so without any further ado, let's just dive in. This is, we're talking about religious liberty around the world. We had a prep call for this event earlier in August, and then all of a sudden, Afghanistan implodes, Kabul falls, 120,000 people are roughly evacuated in an emergency basis in just a matter of days. And so I want to start there. So Karen, let's start with Afghanistan. A couple of questions. From the standpoint of the church, is there such thing as a church in Afghanistan? Number one. Number two, what is its condition if there is an answer yes to that? And number three, what's been your assessment of the world community response? This is something we just talked about before we started, to the crisis of Afghanistan and what comes next. So that's a lot I just sent to you.
Yeah, I'll try and keep that straight, but okay. I have to come back and say, what was that question number two again? I will start by saying that I am not an expert. I'm very much a learner. I learn every day about what's going on in the church, the underground. There are so many different places and regions to learn about that I don't know when you reach expert status over here is when you understand, I think, how politics and culture and history all shape different regions in different ways so that some of the dynamics look the same from place to place, and they'll look like the New Testament experience, but the expression of them change from region to region because there are different dynamics at play in each area. Is there a church in Afghanistan? That's a great question. I'm so glad you led with that. One of the fastest growing disciple-making movements in America is actually happening in Iran. And because of that, and I'm talking about, they will tell you the mosques are empty. The administration, the authoritarian government under which Iran lives, has shown itself since 1979 to be bankrupt. It did not deliver on the utopia it promised. And that caused, over the last two generations, that caused a significant shift in the young people where they said, I've got nothing to lose. There's no economy, there's no job prospects. Iran began to make disciples at such a rapid rate with a disciple-making strategy, and they took Matthew 28 seriously, and they impacted the church in Afghanistan. So Afghanistan was, up until August 15th, one of the second fastest growing disciple-making movements in the world. Up until August 15th, the church was meeting, moving, experiencing a measure of freedom in their ability to gather and assemble. After August 15th, a lot of that fell apart, and I have to make sure that I don't judge people on the basis of where they're feeling called. Some people felt called to leave and try and get out, and a significant number felt called to stay. And so the efforts on the ground became, while we could still evacuate people via air, I don't know, all the stories you've heard about, like, this is Dunkirk by air, those are true. The activities of civilians and organizations and institutions partnering together to help people evacuate was stunning. It really was stunning. One of the most beautiful operations of the body coming together under stress, the global body of Christ coming together under stress to assist basically a government falling apart overnight. So there's that aspect of people who needed to leave, who wanted to leave, and secreting them out while the door was still open to do that until the 31st. In the midst of all of that, there were people who said, I know the cost. If the slogan in that region is death to America, the slogan of the church is death before disobedience. Mm. And they said, I know what I'm facing. I know what's coming. The older people really do know because they've experienced life under the Taliban. The younger people, there's a whole generation of people who have no idea what that life was like, 20 years worth. They chose to stay. And so now they're hidden. A lot of people fled to various areas. They are already counting the cost and already knowing that they're going into a very dark place. But they're going there on behalf of the kingdom, knowing that their witness will stand. So that's a little bit about the church. What was it? Now, see, I knew I was going to have to come back and ask you one more. I was like, you gave me too many questions.
Well, I think you hit all. You hit parts of all of that. Part of all of the question. Mm-hmm. But in the time before we move on to Ambassador Brownback, I wanted to ask you, moving from Afghanistan, because we have to go like this.
Yeah.
Moving from Afghanistan. We had an interesting conversation about what is it that is your primary concern about world religious liberty right now, and your answer surprised me. So surprise them.
Oh, well, but this is just my personal concern has to do with big tech, and particularly now that the Taliban has struck they're striking a relationship with China, who China has an incredible surveillance system. It is not just technological, it is cultural. Like, your cultural associations and your cultural power are built on approval through how big tech surveils you, how much you agree with the Sinicization, how Chinese you really are, and you appear to the government. And so the inroads that technology has made in the last 3 years alone with facial recognition, it's beyond that. They've got it now down to they can tell who you are by your gait, by how you walk. If you go into the embassy in, I won't tell you which country it's in, but one of our partners went into the embassy and he said there were 12 cameras in the embassy. Those cameras weren't just observing video, they were observing data on every person who came in and out and storing it in a system. My concern is how that is being filtered around the world and including into the West. In terms of how surveillance could be exploited on Christian movements in other places where the church is able to remain hidden. How our phones, our microphones into our lives. And so that's I don't know why. Why were you surprised by that answer? You thought I was going to pick a region?
I thought you were going to pick a region.
Yeah. It's going to affect all regions as it spills out. It really is.
Well, Ambassador Brownback, well, let's start with a region or country, China. We had talked about that briefly when we were preparing for this moment. And you had expressed all of the ways in which China, and we're talking through some of the ways in which China was a significant threat to religious liberty and technology as a component of, if you could sort of essentially tell them what you told us just a few minutes ago.
Well, thanks, David, and thanks all of you for being here and your interest in this topic. And Karen's just wonderfully described the situation, and she's also wonderfully described the hope of this. I mean, Jesus is showing up in these places.
He is.
I have interviewed a number of people that have had miraculous signs and wonders that read like, just turn the first few chapters of Acts, go read them again, and it's just happened in Afghanistan or Iran. I got to tell you one quick story on this, because I kept hearing these stories that Iran was the fastest growing church outside of China in the world, and the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. And so if you want to, I would think dictators would figure this out. If you really wanted to hurt Christianity, you'd give them a bunch of money. That's what you would do. You wouldn't oppress them. You wouldn't persecute them, because the blood of the martyrs, see the church, it just grows the thing whenever you do that. So China, fast growing church. Iran, fast growing church. So I called these people up in Iran and I said, well, tell me some of the stories of what you've seen and heard. This lady said, okay. There's this one lady, she had prayed, devout Muslim, every night she prays, I want to see God. And she does this for 6 days in a row. And she finally, last night, she says, okay, this is it. I want to see God tonight. And if I don't see him, I am leaving Islam. I am never coming back. I am done. I am going atheistic. So she goes to sleep that night. She has a dream. Then she's going into this big auditorium. And everybody's very excited. The auditorium's full of people, and they're very excited. And the maitre d' sees her there and says, I understand you want to see God. She said, yes. Okay, well, I think we can arrange that, and takes her to a side room. Takes her to a side room, everybody's very excited. Door opens up and Jesus walks in. And walks over to her and says, I understand you want to see me. And she says, no, I want to see God. And he says, speak to me. Speak to me. And it was just... it's just this power. I mean, you know, imagine how that would rock your world if that happened to you, okay? And maybe some of it has happened to you. I told you the story of Gideon last night about how God likes the odds very long, so that when something really cool happens, we don't go, well, look at me. You know, I did it. You got to go, God did it. That's where we're getting in the world today, guys. The odds are getting really long. China is perfecting this system, and they are deploying it. And it has been deployed in Xinjiang, all but the digitization of the money. The only thing that hasn't been deployed that I can figure out and see is they haven't digitized the money yet. But they're moving to that. And as soon as they do that, then every transaction, they'll be able to track every single transaction. They can track the phones, they've done the genetic testing, they've done this, they've done that, they've done the gait recognition, the facial recognition. And it's deployed. Mm-hmm. It's deployed. And now you're just going to start seeing that system roll out. So that's why I just signed on, as announced this week, as a senior fellow with Open Doors USA. Delighted to join a group, great group. And the big project I'm working on with them is the future of oppression and China's war on faith. Because I think we've got to start announcing this to people, saying, okay, just observe this. And this will be a global phenomena. These technologies move rapidly and easily to urban populations, less quickly to rural, but they move quickly to places. And you've already got your beta test in place in Xinjiang and in Tibet. That's the future of oppression. One of the most remotest regions of the world, and it's already being beta tested and the system perfected. Chen Quan Guo, remember this guy's name, Chen Quan Guo. He's the party secretary over Xinjiang. He was the previous party secretary over Tibet. He's the enforcer. He's Hitler's Himmler, if you will. Xi Jinping sits on top of the system. Chen Kuang Guo's the enforcer guy, and he has put these systems in place. He's been given high budgets, huge budgets, on security apparatus, and they're deployed. And our big thing is that we need to stop, we need to hit the alarm bell now and say these systems exist and they're being deployed, and we've got to start watching out for them because they're coming quickly to a place near you in various forms. And that we've got to push back, because the future of oppression won't be you going to jail. It won't be family members being killed and raped, I hope, although that happens and will continue to happen. You'll be in a virtual police state. There'll be a virtual system. And that's what this thing's going to look like. And it's already there.
Yeah.
It's already there. So that's why I'm just so concerned about this is what the future of it looks like. And just a final point on this, I've talked with a number of, indirectly talked with a number of Chinese Christians, because they don't want to be seen talking to a guy like me. So I got to talk through intermediaries. They are more concerned about this oppression than the Cultural Revolution. The Cultural Revolution produced a number of saints and martyrs. And they called Chinese prison Chinese seminary. Mm-hmm. They went there and they came out shining. I mean, it's like no seminary you'd gone to, yeah. And none that you want to go to either. I mean, they knew the Lord, and they know Him well. This system is one where your friends will think on you. Mm-hmm. This is a system where if you get called on your cell phone by somebody else, you may have a low social credit score, and you may be okay with that. And you may be okay you can't go to school, and your future, you won't be able to do transactions. But your friends are not, and your family members are not. And they're going to lean on you. Will you stop this stuff? The peer pressure of it will be significant. And this is what Justice Alito told me 2 years ago. I went up to him and I said, are you guys going to protect our religious liberties in this country? It's the First Amendment, and he's the lead guy on this. He said, I think you'll get it protected by the law. I think the law will protect your religious liberty. I'm just really concerned whether people can withstand the cultural impact and the cultural oppression on your religious freedoms, and whether or not you're going to be willing to be a pharmacist that says, I can't prescribe that pill that I know is going to be used for an abortion. I can't do it. Well, you're not going to be a pharmacist then. Yeah. And are you willing to do that? Are you willing to take that?
One question, and this extends to the U.S. as well. We're beginning to see movement on things like military pressure on China. There was just a big announcement, the Biden administration, this union of the UK, Australia, and the United States to provide Australia with nuclear submarines makes China very, very angry. But what we have right now is something different than what we experienced in the Cold War, which is massive American private sector facilitation of Chinese oppression. Are you seeing any hope on moving the American private sector away from this cooperation with and facilitation of the Chinese regime?
Yes. I think the supply chain movement, I think the people are looking at it. I think you've got people in Congress looking at forcing, and particularly sensitive sectors like pharmaceutical products and things like that, moving to make illegal the origination of these areas. And this is my bigger hope on it all, the American public has turned anti the Chinese government. And I am not anti-Chinese, right, even though my visa has been pulled, I'm banned from going to China, and I take that as a badge of honor. I went after Chen Guangguo, and we pulled his visa and travel, and his family being able to travel here to the United States, because we were having these naked Chinese leaders in China, where they were there and everybody else was living in California in their family, and we said, well, we'll ban you and your whole family. You can't come here. I go after him, he comes after me. Great, love that trade. If they're going to go after him, and as a human rights person, but the American public is now mad at it. I have a daughter adopted from China. She just She lives in Austin, Texas, doing great. I'll see her this weekend. But the public has moved on this, and I think the American, the biggest problem with America is always getting us to focus. We've got great capacity, we've got great ability, we've got a huge number of problems. Still the greatest nation on the face of the earth, if you put Israel in another category, greatest nation on the face of the earth is the United States of America. Enormous capacity and ability. Our difficulty is focusing. But we're getting focused on China and the Chinese Communist Party. And it's not China, it's the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
All right, well, I think it's time to open up for questions, and I've talked to some of you guys already who told me you've got some questions. So it's now your turn.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think I can speak to just in your own home is moving away from the systems that are unstable and exploitable. Looking at find your tech friends and ask them about encrypted emails. There are emails like Proton Mail. There, this is just totally practical. This isn't. I'll let him deal with the legislative stuff. Just on a practical level, Proton Mail, other mail systems that are outside. That they deal in transparency, first off. They're very transparent on whether or not they use your information. You can check up on them, and your mail is encrypted from end to end. That means nobody can go in and look at it. And they have set up these systems. There are a number of them. Proton Mail, Tutunota is another one. And then talking with your tech friends about setting up VPNs and going to servers like Brave, which is also, they're very honest about what they do with your data. So looking for people who have integrity to continue to operate, you know, and use the technology, but in with people who are actually, who have a high sense of integrity about how they handle your information. And I'll let you handle the, what can we do on a legislative level.
Yeah, I was going to suggest you could move to rural Kansas.
Y'all got internet there too, though.
Yeah, we have an internet, but there's a I think we've got to keep pushing people on the deficit spending. We're living on our being the reserve currency of the world. We should have huge hyperinflation right now, 100% inflation, with the number of dollars we print and the amount of spending that we've done. But we're the reserve currency of the world, and everybody still trades in dollars, and the Chinese know that, and that's why they're trying to digitize their currency as well. When you get a digitized currency, a lot of that reserve status ability goes away if you're able to move to that globally. So I think you keep pushing your members. I would really, though, the deficit, because we have talked about it for years and haven't had any consequences of a huge deficit that people have felt. It's kind of like, so it's hard to get people interested. I really would push him on this tech observation stuff, because they're starting to hear from a lot of people about the technology. In China you get tracked by the government. Here you get tracked by the private sector.
Right.
It's Facebook and Google and these guys, and they may fire you. I mentioned this last night about all these companies now firing their customers because they're Christians or hold to a traditional moral value. Well, people ought to be inventing other systems then for people to join on, or you ought to be moving your work to other systems. And we should say, you know, as a Christian or a Christian organization, you can't do that to me. Mm-hmm. You can't discriminate based on religion. That's one of our basic laws in the country. And yet it's happening. I don't know how many people talk to me about it's happened to them. And we need to start bringing a number of lawsuits. People do, I think, pushing on that. I'd keep raising it. This is a big issue now with people. They're getting it.
Do you think that discrimination is just a problem towards Christian or to all faiths in the U.S.? And I asked that. I was invited a while back to be on some, by some Christian groups to be on some campus access conversations. And I asked a simple question about how they responded to a Muslim campus group that was encountering similar problems. And they weren't willing to go to their defense. And so it struck me, the idea of Christian freedom sometimes has different parameters for Christians too often in this country. And so what do we mean, or what should we mean when we talk about Christian freedom?
Well,
religious freedom.
Yeah, and I was telling Karen about this and inviting her to be a part of it, and I invite you to be a part of it. We're putting together a domestic religious freedom movement, a national committee for religious freedom, and think of the National Right to Life Committee, and it has chapters in various states. There's Texans for Life or Californians for Life, and we're putting that together, and it'll be all religions. And our mantra is religious freedom for everybody, everywhere, all the time. So we don't exclude anybody, and we want everybody in it. We just did a big international summit in July on this, International Religious Freedom Summit 2021. We'll do it again next year, and the mantra is the same, religious freedom for everybody, everywhere, all the time. And what we've got to do, I think, is start standing together for each other's religious freedom rights, even though in the West it's generally Christianity that's persecuted. And the others are kind of give them a pass as they're small, and you know, we kind of think they're cool if we got a few of these and a few of those, but the Christians are big and dominant, and we've got to push back. And then they have this set of moral ideas that we find offensive to the trends within the culture. So I hope you'll be a part of it, and we had all faiths from around the world at this big summit, and everybody's agreeing to this because everybody is a minority somewhere, right, and is persecuted somewhere. And so we just need to stand with each other. And this is a final quick thought on this. I mentioned this last night. If we don't have religious freedom around the world for everybody, we will have the clash of civilizations. We will have a lot of carnage and killing. And you're going to see a genocide in Afghanistan of people that don't agree with the Sunni Muslim philosophy that's been put forward by the Taliban and ISIS. You will see a genocide. And we may well be back in Afghanistan. I think there's a fair likelihood if the terrorists start taking back over there, you're going to see the Western world back in the place, just like what happened in Iraq.
One of the realities is it's tough to end a war when one side doesn't want to stop fighting. Interesting question on the privacy issue. Americans, as a practical matter in the abstract, value their privacy. When you put dollars and cents on it, they do not. And so if you said you could have a $5 a month Facebook where everything is completely private, or continued at $0 a month Facebook where you're an open book, the number of people who take the $5 a month option is infinitesimally small. And so one of the things is education. Yeah. Educating people about the value of your own information, because that's what's making these companies phenomenally wealthy, is the value of your information. Other questions? Yes.
So if Big Tech, Google, and others are a significant threat to religious liberty in the United States, should the government be regulating their ability to sort of fire customers for their religious beliefs? These are private companies, right? So it's not like a First Amendment issue. So how would you create protections for religious believers against Big Tech in this country?
Kind of too, but I think we ought to take page out of the left's book and sue them. They are discriminating against people on the basis of their faith. And remember, it's probably some 25-year-old in Palo Alto, but now it's probably sitting in his basement in Montana, that's made the decision to fire you as a company. And they're doing that off of an educational system that has said Christians have persecuted people. And we haven't been without our own faults of being judgmental towards people. And I hold my own hand up. I've been judgmental towards people that do things that I think morally are wrong, even though I do things that I think I'm morally wrong too. So, I mean, we've done it, but I think we've got to start bringing lawsuits. And you've got, Congress has got the beat. They're hearing it. They're holding these hearings, and these hearings are very well. There are a lot of people interested, left and right, on this. And so I think you just keep pushing that, and I think people ought to sue them.
I echo that. I had a great conversation with a human rights activist named Knox Thames, who I'm sure you guys know.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, the beauty of having a constitution that protects your rights is that you have the court systems at your advantage. He observed that, you know, really what we're experiencing isn't persecution. It's actually a rise in anti-Christian hostility, right? So then we make a differentiation between that. But the beauty part is that, you know, a bad day here for us is a good day in a lot of other places, right? So, and that's the advantage, is that we have a court system that's set up supposedly to serve and maintain our freedoms. And I agree, exercise it.
Can I build on this point? The problem of it is, if we don't exercise it, we will lose ground here, and it gets magnified around the world. It gets worse in other places around the world. So that's why this place always has to be the vanguard on human rights issues and on issues like this. We have to fight. That's what I was saying to you last night. We have to fight, because if we lose ground here, it'll be far worse in Nigeria or India. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this isn't just about you. When we lost the abortion fight in Roe versus Wade, it was bad here. It got horrible in a lot of places. Yeah. And we legitimized, in some sense, China's one-child policy with Roe versus Wade. Well, now when Roe gets overturned, and please be praying for it that it happens this year or next, because there's a case up that this could happen, that'll magnify around the world. That's why you guys know this. This is mama cow here. You know, always take care of the mother cow, right? Well, this is a farm terminology, I guess. I don't
know. Well, you know, one quick
thing. Take care of home.
One quick thing, though, just a note of caution. Be really careful about what you wish for on increased government authority over private institutions. Yeah. Be very careful about that. You know, we have some really strong constitutional firewalls right now. And right now, the government, the right and the left want to regulate big tech more, but with a very different point of view. So the left, as a general matter, wants to regulate big tech more, to empower big tech to censor private speech more, and to in fact mandate that it would censor private speech more. And the right tends to want to regulate big tech to open up to more speech. But once you've broken the constitutional firewall, whoever is running the government then is essentially, I don't know that we necessarily need our presidential campaign to be about running the government and Facebook. So we got to be careful. This has got to be smart, targeted stuff. And anything you hear that says I'm against big tech, got to read the owner's manual a little bit to see what the consequences might be. That's just my view. Yes?
It seems like there's been a lot of generosity in the West towards France crackdown, Muslim rights. Mm. Is that a general trend, do you think, or is that specific to the French situation with their history with the Muslim population?
I think it's some of both. Remember, the Europeans will limit things that we won't. They'll limit dress, you know, and they'll say you can't wear the hijab or you can't do this or that. And we'd go, let a person dress the way you want. Mm-hmm. You know, a friend of mine, he went to a California beach earlier this year, and it had on there a sign as he went on, clothing optional, mask required. That's America, you know, they're right, you know, you just clothing optional, mask required, and we, but we're on religious guard. But Europeans, they'll limit that. They're, now they're going after Judaism, really just, they want to end circumcision as a child right, which also vexes Islam, and you're just going, wait a minute. This one goes back quite a ways. Now, I know it looks, sounds pretty cruel and graphic and everything, but this, this goes back to Abraham, right? He's the dad figure in all of this. And so I think, again, we have to push back on those sorts of things and be pretty clear about it, that this is religious freedom and you're entitled to practice that any way you see fit as long as it's peaceful.
Yes, sir, back in the back.
And I want Karen to get in the studio. You can run for the school board, and or get somebody else to, and back them. And we lose when we don't fight. The other team just wins. If we can get out there, and you can look at it, and you will think the odds are going to seem pretty long. And you may lose the first time you run for the school board, but there'll be a lot of people out there kind of listening out of the side of their ear and somebody saying, that guy's crazy. And there'll be other people sitting around going, kind of a little crazy, but I agree with him. I don't know how many people, when I first started running for office, these would be primarily business people, businessmen. They'd come up to me after a meeting, we'd be talking economics, this and that and everything, and they'd look around a little bit and they'd go, you know, I'm really with you on the life issue. I actually agree with you. But they weren't going to say it in public.
Nicodemus.
Yeah, it was very quiet. And I was kind of going, well, why won't you say that publicly?
Yeah.
But we think we're in a minority. Mm-hmm. 1 in 3 people in the world's a Christian now. In 1980, it was 1 in 5. God's moving, and he won't be beat. And he remains sovereign. You got me on my high horse, but I was down in Texas visiting my daughter, and I'm going back, walking back after getting a cup of coffee, and there's storm clouds rolling in the air, and this happens often in the Midwest. Californians aren't used to that, but we got, you know, this happens all the time. And Texas is the southernmost county of Kansas. So there's clouds rolling in the air there. And there's this little bird sitting up on a light pole, just singing his heart out, just singing at the top of his lungs. And I thought, you know, that's what we're supposed to be. There's storm clouds all over the place, and we're just supposed to sing. And sing of the glory of God. And that's what we're supposed to, in this season, where you seem like everything's just going to pot, you know, what's our role? Yeah. It isn't to hide, it's to sing, sorry.
No, don't be sorry. Don't ever be sorry for talking about the glory of God. To your question, sir, the first part of your question, is there a way to approach these things without recrimination and becoming a byword? No, there just isn't. It's part of the package. And I think that we are figuring out some things that our brothers and sisters around the world in more compromised positions have known for a long time. As I talk about the persecuted church and the underground church and the persevering church, because on the flip side of persecution, there's perseverance. I acknowledge that evil is systemic. Evil infiltrates systems, especially here in the West. Outside of the West, you see more preternatural and supernatural movement. But systems in the West, because they're built by fallen people, evil has a toehold, and systems can become evil. School boards can teach evil things. They can teach dehumanizing things. The antidote is systematizing good. This is where, talking about with Ambassador Brownback here, hearing him say, join the school board. This is what minorities, I say this as an African-American woman, this is what minorities have known for years. You guys are entering the minority experience. Welcome. We've been waiting for you. Mm-hmm. Right? So what do? You infiltrate the system. You run for the school board. You run for other things. You run for these things. And you bring in and infuse the system with light and good, and you do it subversively. Here's a great example I just used with my students in my Christian View of Human Rights course. Why was it at the 9/11 memorials, why are the bagpipes the sound of the police and fire department in New York? Why is that the sound of the memorial? Bagpipes. Where did that come from? You only see it in New York. But there they are, doing their thing, right? Honoring the dead with the four-tone, bagpipe signature sound. It's because when the Irish first came to America, they were heavily oppressed by the police. They were beaten up, and they said, well, how do we fix this? We'll join the police force. And they turned it around, and they infiltrated the culture. Now, we as Christians need to do that, because there is a concept of Christianity as its own distinct cultural minority. It was born in the New Testament as its own distinct cultural minority. And so we need to start, and this is one of the great things about facilitating conversation now between the East and the West, the North and the South, the local and the global, is we're starting to talk with underground leaders and get their knowledge. They got those good Jason Bourne skills. They know how to do this. And they know how to tell us. The Edmiston Center just had the honor, this is just for this room, y'all, don't tell nobody. We just had the honor of facilitating a 30-page letter from one underground church network to another, in a completely different geographic region thousands of miles away, of these pastors who've lived under persecution for 100 years, several generations, and they're writing to a new group whose government has just fallen, and they're saying, we know. For some reason, God has allowed us to experience this, and we understand. And now people are starting to talk to each other across regions. They're starting to talk to each other from closed countries into the freer world. This is where the book of Acts starts to come to life. You'll read it, and you'll walk out into the street into your school board meeting, and you'll see it come to life. This is the promise of the New Testament. And that's where our anxiety, all of our cultural anxiety that we experience right now, place where it becomes adventure.
And you have to do it as a Christian. You got to do it with love. It's got to be done in faith.
Yeah.
You got to believe the word of God. You don't fight like a man, you fight like a believer.
Mm. Good word.
Well said. Well, I think we're done, unfortunately. I'm sorry. I just got the almighty nod in the back. It's not my fault. Right back there. Blame her. Right. But thank you guys very much. Thank you all. And that was a wonderful note to end on.